Hey, this is Taylor.
This is Jake.
And this is Dan.
And this is Unicorn Finders, where we are on the search to illuminate the elusive unicorn factor in everyday people, businesses, and relationships. Hope you enjoy.
What is going on, everybody? Good morning. I'm really glad, I just noticed this is a great little feature for StreamYard. I'm glad that when you come off the countdown, it unmutes it for you. Because yes, my ass would totally be talking without it muted. So, yeah. But good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday. Welcome to another edition of Unicorn Finders. Before we dive in, I want to give a quick background about what Unicorn Finders is. In case if anybody's still watching this after 4 years outside of my mother. But Unicorn Finders basically was started by me, Jake, and Dan. Jake is no longer with us. He didn't die. He just got
Oh, yeah. He's still alive. Yeah.
He's still alive. Yeah. And so Dan and I are just LeBron Jamesing it up and carrying this ourselves. And so we are on the mission to find companies doing really cool shit that you probably haven't heard of yet.
Yeah.
And so I would say we're talking to a founder and a company that's doing really cool shit that you haven't heard of yet. So all that being said, Tom, welcome to the show. We appreciate you coming on. Hey, what's the weather in London right now? I'm kind of curious.
As bad as it could probably be predicted to be.
For real?
Okay. Pretty much raining since I got back from San Francisco.
There you go. I love it. All right, Tom, let's give the people a quick introduction just about you. Your background is super high level. I know we can't go super deep on some things. And then we'll dive into your startup.
Yeah, for sure. I'm Tom. I'm the co-founder of a new company that we're building at the moment. I've built a few companies over the last decades. Data scientist by background, always been really passionate about understanding human behavior, why we do the things that we do, and kind of how technology can both make that more efficient, but also make it easier for us to do those sorts of things as well. Spent kind of the last 10 to 15 years building companies, had a couple of successful ones, had a couple of unfortunately unsuccessful ones. And then outside of that, been doing some stuff working with various organizations, governments, United Nations, given a TEDx on artificial intelligence and quantum computing and all that kind of cool stuff. And then fun fact about me in my spare time, you'll probably find me exploring abandoned buildings. One of the things I really like to do is urbex and kind of taking cool photos of like abandoned places where humans aren't more anymore.
You have like an Instagram or a website we can see these abandoned photos?
I think the handle is I am T Charman. Off the top of my head, I think that's the
Okay. I'm totally going to message you to get that afterwards so I can follow you. But that's awesome.
There's probably some really cool buildings in London. And then I know you live in San Francisco, and I know that that was a ghost town for a few years. Am I right? Stay for my jokes.
Yeah.
So Tom, before we get into this business, I'm fascinated by you. You have a degree in economics and a degree in politics. That's what I got my degree in. I'm in recruiting. And you got into data scientist. I want to hear about your journey into that world. And then I want to hear about this new company.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I said, the whole time through like university, I was building companies. I was like that kind of like weird guy that was like, even at like, kind of middle school, was like selling sweets to friends and like doing what I could to kind of make a bit of money here and there. But when I was at university, like I started my first proper startup, built that the whole way through and kind of got that to a good place by the time I was leaving. But the data science thing, like for me, like when I was doing economics, I always just found the whole like econometrics and also kind of like game theory stuff super interesting.
Yeah. But,
that the whole like prisoner's dilemma, like everyone defaults to being evil humans at the end of the day. It's like that kind of stuff got me thinking. And I kind of pursued that behavioral economics route after university, combined that with maths. To be honest, it's not that far away from data science at that point.
Sure.
That's kind of how it happened.
Wow, that's really, really cool. So we got to download with you for about 15 minutes before we started today about what you're doing and what you're building. And we have a lot of really cool companies. There's no offense to them. But this is a really, really, really cool company and business that you're trying to create. But beyond just being a cool product, it's going to be a potential huge game changer for the way that businesses look at their consumers and their product users. So why don't you dive into a little bit about what you guys are trying to build?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, like we've built a few companies in the past, and one of the big problems we've always had is around experimentation. So trying to kind of work out how we should be building the products and who we should be building it for. And, you know, the kind of industry standard today is A/B testing. It's, you know, build an experiment, run it live, and then test it on a small group of people, which you treat in the same homogenous way. Everyone's exactly the same. You wait to see how the experiment performs, and then you make a decision as to whether you should essentially go and implement that experiment within your product or not. Our view is like to take this in a kind of slightly different direction. We, you know, the way that we look at things right now is we feel like people are trying to kind of smash a nut with a hammer. That doesn't feel like the right way to be approaching things. And I think we're at a point now where you can actually take a lot of like behavior and kind of how people are using products and then actually try and kind of break them down into different types of customer profiles. Get to the point where you can actually properly understand the different types of people you have within your platform. And that's kind of the first thing that we're doing. It's how do we help companies understand how different people are using their product in different ways? Obviously, things like Segment do that, but we're taking a slightly different approach and actually adding psychographic data on top of it. But then the kind of the thing that makes this whole thing interesting is when you get to the point where you've got these different behavioral profiles, we can train agents using kind of any of the various foundational models that are out there and then actually begin to predict how different customers are likely to behave to different growth experiments. And the reason that we're doing that is because we want to get to the point where we can use experimentation to really kind of get to the point that everyone's promised us, which is personalization. How do we get to the point where like my version of Uber and your version of Uber could be two fundamentally different products based on not just the behavioral profiles that we have, but how we're using those different products? And that opens up a whole bunch of like things for us. Like, you know, the obvious thing that I tend to use, sorry, Dad, but like when my dad tries to book an Uber, it's literally the most experience I've ever watched. And it's kind of like, we just make it easier for dad to be able to order the Uber, give him a slightly different user interface, create these adaptive interfaces that are essentially powered by behavioral profiles, and then give me an interface as well, which is based on how I'm using the product.
So for instance, if a product has 15 different features and there's, you log on to the app and there's 15 different buttons that you could press, what you guys could potentially do is say, hey, based on your usage, you only use these two things. So they might be prominently on the screen or wherever. The rest still exist, but we know that you're coming to Uber to get a taxi service instead of all of the other components of it, right? Uber Pool and Uber XL and all these other things, right?
Yeah, the exact thing happened to me like to a degree while I was actually at South By recently. Like, I arrived in the city. I'm used to being in San Francisco. I was jumping around trying to get from place to place. And only on the third day did I realize that Uber had been a little bit cheeky and had auto essentially kind of put me into Uber XL. So all of the rides I'd been ordering were XLs. And then I realized on the third day, I was like, this is, you know, it's okay. It's not too expensive. Yeah.
Why is my Uber bill $900?
Yeah. Right? Everybody have an Escalade in Austin, right?
Yeah. Right. So I was kind of like, we're trying to do that, but in a good way, trying to give people the best experiences possible and actually kind of like begin to personalize the product in a way that like, if I'm always ordering Uber XLs, give me Uber XLs. But if I'm always ordering Uber X, give me Uber X.
That's fascinating. So I know from a consumer, you know, product, right? We've mentioned Uber, sure, things like DoorDash, things of that nature exist. From a business perspective, that's a little bit more user base in the professional level. How does that transition over? And do you have like an example of how that could be used for like a business product?
Yeah. So I think like, I mean, generally speaking, like, I mean, our core focus at the moment is like helping businesses understand their customers. And that really is very much like B2C. However, we've already kind of started building some models that are looking at how different organizations behave as well. So in the way that you're building kind of behavioral profiles out about your users, your users can also be businesses as well. So how can we essentially begin to quantify the types of behaviors that businesses are also exerting and then get to the point that you can, it does get a little bit tricky in the sense of users within the organization using the app differently. But I think in theory, as long as we can build out these behavioral profiles, you're in a pretty strong position to personalize. And as I say, I don't think you're ever going to get to an N of one where like everyone's getting truly personalized experience, because the data that you would need to be able to do that would be vast.
Yeah.
I certainly think you can begin to get to the point where like small groups of people are getting genuinely unique experiences and being able to kind of use the app and the apps and products that they use in a much better way.
Yeah, NVIDIA is drooling at the idea of every single person getting their own individual different computing experience.
The only one is NVIDIA. NVIDIA always wins.
What? So for companies who would want to, I guess, purchase this, right? I mean, what would that process look like to integrate it into their stack, quote unquote?
Super easy. It's literally a couple of lines of code, and then we're ready to go. It literally takes a couple of days. You've set it in within a couple of days, you're starting to get results. We're a SaaS product. We sit within the organization's, code base, basically. And very quickly, we're beginning to get results and beginning to deliver some genuine value. Like the example I would give is there was one company I was working with who they basically asked us to be able to predict whether a customer was likely to convert from essentially free to paid. Went through this process with them. And we did this with a couple of other companies as well. But this company in particular, the thing that we learned is the customer with the highest LTV wasn't making it through the onboarding process. So that was like a really big problem that they had, in the sense of people in product teams, generally speaking at the moment, at least in my opinion, and not all, are thinking about the local as opposed to the global maxima, the long versus the short term. And it's, how do we help redefine this and say, do you know what? Actually, if your conversions are going down, but you're converting better customers, you're not going to run into a churn problem 6 months from now. And by doing, and how do we do that? It's about understanding the different types of people that are coming to your platform and then making sure that you're building for your best customers.
I know that you have, and we're bouncing all over the place here, just ideas are running through my brain here. I know that you have a security background.
Yeah.
To me, this seems like a fascinating security play too. I'm sure you've thought of this. If not, 10% equity is fine. But learning and understanding user behavior from a security perspective, right? I mean, that's a huge opportunity.
For sure. I think like we're trying to kind of take an approach, which is, there's a whole bunch of fields that this can be applied to. Mm-hmm. The reason we've chosen product is, we're trying to kind of take an approach where we're never getting to the point where we're looking at like the individual data. Like, I will never know what your data is within the product. And to be honest, I'm not interested in knowing what your data is. What I'm interested in knowing is how are different people using your product, the product of an organization differently, and how can we make that experience better? But you're right, like there is a whole bunch of fields that this can definitely be applied to.
Yeah, wow, that's really, really cool. So what's the pathway, right? So you guys have started this company, congratulations. I know you just did your pre-seed round and you're still going through that process, getting all that finalized. But what's the process from here? Obviously, there's a business development component of it. There's continuing to build out your algorithms and everything else. But, you've done this before. So that means you've learned a few things along the way. But what does it look like for building out this company and ultimately getting out into the market?
Yeah. So for us, like right now, we're going quite deep on the like behavioral profiling, getting to the point where we can really understand the different types of people that are using platforms and, kind of beginning to build out these synthetic profiles. Again, like because we're not touching user data, the way that we approach things is we build synthetic data sets. So it means that no one's getting the data exposed. And the kind of nice thing about it is essentially like product teams can begin to understand their customers without making their customers feel like they're being watched. That's the kind of the big thing for us. So we're kind of like getting that right and thinking about a whole bunch of things there. Like, we're even looking at kind of like data enclaves so that we don't have to worry about, again, personally identifiable information. You're going to find here that someone that comes from Europe is always thinking quite carefully about AI policy and data regulation. Mm-hmm. Like naturally that thing that's been like drummed into me and kind of having played a role in at some level in kind of GDPR in the early days, but also kind of the data privacy side of things is something I care quite deeply about. But at the same time, I'm also fascinated by giving people personalized experiences without exposing that data. So that's kind of like the first thing is like getting that right in a way that doesn't expose too much information, but is also really beneficial to teams.
So sorry to interrupt, because I'm curious about that. Obviously GDPR is a huge conversation over there. And then over in the UK or the EU, Europe, right? You guys aren't even in the EU anymore. Over in Europe, Americans are probably not as critical about it, but certainly the voice is growing, especially as we get into AI about data privacy and everything else. So how do you, without revealing your secret formula here, how do you connect to the user without potentially exposing their data? Is it based on ISP? Are there certain tokens that when the app hits? I'm just kind of curious.
So there's a few ways. The way that we're exploring is like there's a whole new field that's beginning to kind of pop up in cryptography called zero knowledge. And that's kind of the space that we're beginning to dig into. It kind of came out of crypto, and like kind of that whole like blockchain process, etc. Enclaves is the kind of new way in which like enclaves existed, I think, in blockchain around the kind of transaction side of things in order to, you know, kind of authenticate data and that side of things. We're thinking about it from that approach because I think there's some cool stuff that's happening there. There's some interesting hardware coming out from Intel and various other companies that I think could be quite valuable. So that's kind of the approach that we're beginning to explore. There are a whole bunch of ways that you can do it, though. That's the way that we're thinking about it anyway.
Man, that's cool stuff. So I know we kind of mentioned it, but what's next for the business?
Beginning, so we've just brought on our first few, I guess, call them design partners, call them customers. We're kind of moving forward with those at the moment, building out with them, beginning to hire. So we're bringing on a couple of like awesome people from awesome companies, you know, kind of, yeah, potentially a couple of DeepMind guys coming over, potentially even an OpenAI coming over, but can't say too much more on that just yet.
Sam all leaving OpenAI. Yeah.
You heard it here first.
There's some cool people beginning to kind of like get ready to come and join the team. So that's kind of like get those onboarded, continuing to build out on the like behavioral side. And then it's a case of we've got a good wait list of customers now. We've got about 60 customers that have joined our wait list in the last couple of weeks. We're onboarding at kind of like, I mean, the wait list is growing by kind of like 30-40% on a monthly basis right now, which is awesome. And considering we're like, no one knows who we are, right? It's literally just word of mouth. This is a cool thing. You should, you know, kind of try it out. So that's been great to us. I think it's, yeah, next 6 months building. And then I think towards the end of this year, it'll be a case of like beginning to onboard that wait list for us and beginning to just grow the company and drive it out and then begin to move beyond the exist. Like, as I say, the core focus for us right now, B2C, post Series A SaaS companies. But we want to kind of look at other ends of the spectrum there. We've got a couple of enterprise partners that are really keen to work with us. And we've also got some really early stage companies that right now we can't support because the data's not there for them. So you can't really do a whole lot. But I think in time we will be able to support those companies as well.
How much, and this is, I know there's no right answer, but it's called a trap question. How many users does a company need to have, or how much data do they need to have before you can actually glean a reasonable insight, every bit of it, is it 10,000, is it 100,000, is it 500,000, right? Because I know, you know, in the field of obviously in economic psychology and then just data as itself, what you want to avoid is obviously your hallucinations or your assumptions, right? So how much, and obviously they're going to learn from other things, but how many like customers does somebody need to have before you can actually start to target in on it?
So when you're talking B2C, you're talking tens of thousands of customers, not hundreds of thousands, not millions, but like tens of thousands, good position to be in. B2B, slightly different. There's, you know, obviously a lot more data being gathered. So you're talking thousands. So that's kind of like the ballpark figure. Yeah, you're right. There's no specific number. It really depends on the company. But that's kind of like the ballpark.
Okay. That's awesome. I mean, is there much competition in the space? Have you guys
been carved out your own lane? I was asked that too.
There's a whole bunch of guys doing some really awesome stuff in kind of like similar space around like the content side of things. You know, kind of like being able to predict how different customers will behave to different types of copy based on the types of profiles that you've got. So in that sense, yes. You know, like this has been done when it comes to like recommendation engines. Like really what we're, you know, people that really invented this was the ad space. We're not going after the ad space because there are kind of like, in my view, a few kind of privacy things that come into play at that point, which is why we've kind of tackled product. In product, I've seen a couple of very early stage companies similar to us. But it does feel like we've only recently got to the place where technology has just caught up with a really big problem. And it's a really big problem wanted to solve for a very long time, but we've only just got to the point where we can now actually solve it. And that's why I think in the next 12 to 18 months, this will probably become a pretty hot space. And I guess that's why we're trying to move on it as fast as we possibly can.
Sure. Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. I mean, we talk a lot about companies, we talk a lot about products on this show. There's a few that you can see could be revolutionary. So I'm giving you the Dan Thompson revolutionary ribbon for today.
Dan does not give those out lightly. Actually, I don't know if Dan's ever truly given them out. No, I actually just to be totally
it,
frank.
Right? Yeah, I just created it.
No, thank you. No, that's all. I mean, like, I hope so, right? Like, it's I'm excited by it. Like, I've built B2C companies in the past. I never really knew whether I'd get really excited. I built B2B as well, but never really knew if I'd get really excited about B2B. But this is kind of one of those ones where I guess to a degree it's B2B2C. Like, it's for me, I just want to be able to open my app and be able to have a good time with all of the apps I'm using and not have to watch my dad swear when he tries to book an Uber every time. That's the, you know, like, simple
that
things.
That should be the tagline for the company right there. Trying to not it's swear just a picture while your dad, of your dad uses an app.
The logo is just his dad as like a sketch drawing.
I love that.
Just make
I love
Uber
that.
Easier.
Hey, Tom, I want to kind of pivot here because, I mean, I'm enjoying the conversation. What are you seeing just right now in the raising space, VC space? Is it as bad as it as people make it out to be? Is it, I mean, like, just give me general thoughts on that, because we really haven't dug into this with any of our other folks.
For sure. Like, it's not great. It's definitely not 2021. People are still getting funded. I think certainly it kind of like pre-seed seed, and maybe I see Series A does get a little bit like hairy sometimes, but like, I think the thing that I'm seeing is like, there are a lot more founders right now. There have been big tech layoffs and
people
been laid off from like Facebook, one of the fan companies, whatever. Like, you're thinking, do I go and join another fan company who probably aren't hiring a whole bunch at the moment?
Sure.
Or do I just go and build something myself? So that's meant that there's a lot more people building. And I think combine that with like limited capital calls coming from some of the LPs of funds, like it means that, you know, things are a little bit more hairy than they have been in the past. However, I think we are now beginning to get to the point where, to some degree, LPs and funds, VCs in general, they're just kind of getting to the point where they're like, who knows when this is going to get better, but we can't just sit on our hands forever. So I think I am beginning to see like more people raise money. Things are improving a little bit, but I think there is still an element of like everyone sitting on their hands waiting for an exciting thing to come along. When that exciting thing comes along, they'll jump. But it's how do you, as a founder, perceive yourself as being that next hot thing? And, you know, really that comes down to, what have you done in the past? Do you have a good, like, it comes down to those, like, how do you make sure that you're giving the right knee-jerk reactions to the investors that you're talking to? And to be honest, that took me a little while to work out myself. You know, I needed to work out what it was about my personality and my background. And also I needed to make sure that the market size for what I was building in was truly big enough in order to kind of get these early pre-seed VCs out to kind of deploy cash.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of folks that are in the PE space. And the PE space and the VC space are similar, but different in terms of what they often look for. And I know that the prevailing thought amongst both right now is investing in the founder and not just investing in the idea or the product itself. So I think you just echoed that. So
100% is the biggest, like, a pre-seed is the biggest thing. Like, I think the thing that, like, you know, I do a tiny bit of like angel investment now. And I think like the mindset I have is the idea that the founder pitches to me the first time they see me is going to be fundamentally different to the thing that they actually end up building. Like, even in our case, like where we started out, when we started thinking about this problem, it's still similar, but it's definitely an offshoot to where we started building in this space.
Yeah. I love that.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. Like I say, incredible product. Taylor, what were you going to say?
No, I was just saying, Tom, thank you.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me. No, it's been a cool chat.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'll let you go, man. Again, thank you so much. If a company sees this and wants to reach out to you, how can people find you?
Good question. LinkedIn is good. Twitter is good, although I can't guarantee. I'm not the best on Twitter. I'm working on it. X, whatever we want to call it. Like,
we still call it Twitter.
Yeah, right. I don't think it's 81 there, but right now it's still very much
Twitter. As long as Twitter.com still takes me there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so like either of those are pretty good for me. Like, they're probably the two best places.
Awesome. Sweet. Well, Tom, thank you again, my friend. Enjoy the rest
of Tom, I've got a quick question. Oh, this is a cultural question. Full
like
English breakfast.
And toast.
Yeah, full English breakfast. Is that as popular in... I've never been to the UK. Do you guys like that? Or is that just like an American joke about UK food?
So I don't know. This is like an N of one, right? The first thing I did when I got back to the UK was bought some bacon, some sausages, some baked beans, and made it for English breakfast.
Now you live in America. Are the baked beans the same? I mean, I know that we
have like
sugar and like a bunch of different stuff, all hickory style, you know.
I actually don't know. I to be fair, like they are different. I don't know. I mean, I haven't. I don't know whether I've had like Heinz baked beans. I'm sure I have in the US, but like
so much.
I think that, I mean, they are generally the same, unless obviously, you know, kind of you're going for like barbecue beans and stuff like that. There's something nice about the, like the full English breakfast and roast. They're the two things I miss every time I'm living like in San Francisco.
That's awesome. All right, let me ask you this. If we're going culture too, what's your favorite fish and chips place in London? Go. If you were hankering for it, where are you going?
Two places, Sutton and Sons, which is like a pretty awesome like place, and Poppy's. Two like OG places in the city for sure.
Sutton Sons, but I'm gonna save that for my next trip to London. That's not even on
the radar. We've got a couple more minutes here. I know Tom's ready to leave, but now we're just gonna get into a London discussion. What's your football club of choice?
Ooh.
Yes.
Yeah, so we may break the internet here.
I've got like a get out of jail free card here. I've never been big on football. But I was born in Sheffield. So time someone asks the question, Sheffield United. I have no idea how they're doing in the tables right now.
Here, I will Google it right now because I'm curious. Same. Sheffield United. They are 20th in the Premier League. Not looking great.
Is that relegation range?
They are actually dead last in the Premier League.
That's exactly.
Sheffield is 20. Burnley is 19. 18 is Luton Town.
Oh yeah. Okay, we're doing worse than Luton. Cool.
Yeah, and did Luton just
you disappointed him, Taylor? Year they got what promoted?
Yeah, Luton Town. Wasn't Luton Town the really small club that's been promoted a few times over the course of a few years?
I could well be, yeah.
I saw something where like this stadium, this club stadium is like super tiny in the middle of the
town. Is that the one like in between like row homes?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's Luton Town. So
wow.
Yeah, no, this is why I'm more of a rugby guy. And obviously you can tell like I'm a big guy, like I played rugby in my youth. Like rugby is that's my sport. Like trying to get into American football. Sorry to every American that I'm about to insult right now, but like it just doesn't hit in the same way the rugby does.
I'll tell you, we are having a fascinating discussion in the office on Tuesday about what sport do you think that if you could dedicate a year of your life to that you think you could try out for the Olympic team, not necessarily make it, but that you'd be able to put up a good effort. There's a guy in our office that's about 6'1", maybe 160 pounds soaking wet. He's like, I think rugby. I was like, you are so sorely mistaken on what rugby is. He's like, oh, you just like running, you kick the ball. I'm like,
those guys are monsters. I don't think those guys are absolute monsters.
Yeah.
I would say they're more monsters than football players.
Yeah, like we don't wear any padding. Like that's
It's nuts. Joke,
right?
It's tackle football with no padding.
Yeah.
It's the NFL with no pads. So
yeah, exactly. Like the only thing we put in is like a little thing over our like heads so we don't get like cauliflower ears that like
that's it. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, I have a 10. So this was fun.
Quick announcement for those that are watching, not paying attention to the news. OJ Simpson passed away. Breaking news here on Unicorn Finders.
What?
No way.
Yeah. That just happened.
I didn't mean to bring the mood down. You think Nicole's up in heaven just going, gotcha. Anyway.
All right.
That's a bad joke, but don't murder people. Todd, dude, it's a pleasure to chat with you, man. I'm fascinated to watch you guys go and grow. Like I said, this has been one of the coolest conversations that we've had, just in terms of who you are, what you've done. And this is the tippy tip of the top of the iceberg of Tom and his career. So if you guys are watching, go check him out. Go check out his TEDx talk. Go follow him on LinkedIn. This is a winner right here.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. See you guys.
Awesome. See you later.